The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth.
Hey! Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think that we need to rethink it and criminalize
to the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to the show. It is Friday, May 9th, 2014, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the weekend, everyone. We finally made it, and it's a great weekend here in Portland, Oregon, where the Patients Out of Time Conference is still happening today and tomorrow. Going to go out tomorrow and meet some of the folks that are in town from all across the country and, in fact, all around the world to learn the latest in cannabis therapeutics. My friend Dr. Uma is in from Boston. We've got Ruby Lexington and the crew from Weeducated Talk Radio are in town, one of our podcast partners that we replay here on 420 Radio. We're going to try to catch up with them and plenty of other folks. If you'd like to meet up with us here at 420radio.org, just hit me up on the contact page at 420radio.org/contact. On today's show, we debut a new segment we call Cannabis Cinema, and we have interviewed lots of directors and writers and actors before, but now we're just going to make a brand new segment out of it, Cannabis Cinema, and today we debut that with Sean Patrick Kroll, who is the director of a new award-winning documentary about marijuana smuggling called Grounded. It traces the story of a couple of brothers who were involved in the smuggling operation and a couple of others who were involved in the law enforcement side. It's a fascinating show. It's won some awards at a few festivals, and we will talk all about that with Sean Patrick Kroll at half past the hour. Also on today's show, time for a radical rant at the end of the show. Minnesota has passed its medical marijuana laws, both in the House and the Senate. Breaking news, in fact. Minnesota's House just passed 86-36, I believe, was the vote. We'll talk more about that on Monday's show as these House and Senate bills have to be reconciled. But in great news from Minnesota that hasn't gotten as much ink, they have just passed a major reform to civil asset forfeiture in the state that finally brings some justice and common sense to that issue. We'll tell you all about it in the Radical Rant at the end of the show. In behind the headlines today, some cops in Boston are complaining about drug testing that's racist and inaccurate. The hell you say? We'll tell you all about that in behind the headlines. Also, we've got Herb Thrasher calling up for our Rockin' Friday Daily Toker Tunes. Great band from Vancouver, Washington that appeared at the Global Cannabis March, The Syndicate. They will be our guests for our tune today. And then coming up next, the 420 Radio News. We've got some new polls in the headlines, as well as some terrible stories from Los Angeles on a man imprisoned twice for no good reason. Stick around.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420-friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the best way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney, Omar Figueroa." Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at omarfigueroa.com. 420 Radio, the activist radio station. Cannabis Outreach Collective is an alternative health and wellness option located in Gladstone, Oregon, that serves patients in the Portland area and beyond. We are a full-service alternative health and wellness collective accommodating patients with natural, organic, holistic, and homeopathic remedies, nutritional guidance, advice, education, and medical cannabis, fully in accordance with Oregon OMMP law. You can find out more about Cannabis Outreach Collective on Facebook at COC503 or by emailing cannabisoutreachcollective503@gmail.com or by telephone at 503-853-1319. Check out our menu on Weed Maps and visit Cannabis Outreach Collective today.
This is your 420 Radio News for Friday, May 9th, 2014. I'm Russ Belville. 54% of Oregonians would support marijuana legalization, according to a new poll released by Oregon Public Broadcasting. Strong support for the question, "Would you support or oppose Oregon legalizing marijuana for adults 21 and older?" came in at 35%, while strong opposition came in at 29%. Currently, two organizations are sponsoring citizen initiative petition drives to put three different legalization measures on the November 2014 ballot. The Campaign for the Restoration and Regulation of Hemp is a grassroots campaign promoting regulation which would legalize possession and cultivation limits equal to medical marijuana in the state at 24 plants and 24 ounces. New Approach Oregon is promoting regulation limited to 4 plants and 8 ounces, backed by national organizations and big money funders. Those initiatives need over 87,000 signatures. CRRH is also sponsoring a constitutional amendment that grants citizens the right to grow and possess personal amounts of cannabis subject to regulation. That initiative needs over 116,000 signatures. The Los Angeles County Jail is releasing an innocent man jailed on drug charges for a second time. 6 years ago, Gerber Guzman was a victim of identity theft. Guzman's identity was then used by a drug dealer who eventually had a warrant placed for his arrest. The real drug dealer was never caught, but Guzman was, and placed under arrest. After 16 days in jail, Guzman was finally released when U.S. Marshals realized Guzman's fingerprints didn't match the drug dealer's fingerprints on file. Now, 6 years later, and with his wife 8 months pregnant, Guzman was pulled over for an expired registration when the police picked up on the outstanding warrant DEA had placed for the drug-dealing identity thief. This time, Guzman was locked up for 11 days before his wife's pleas brought the local CBS affiliate in to investigate. Guzman's wife said to the station, quote, "They told us it wasn't going to happen again, and fast forward 6 years later, it happened again," end quote. The chairman of the House subcommittee reviewing the District of Columbia's new decriminalization law claims his thoughts on the issue are, quote, "evolving." Representative John Micah, a Republican from Florida, said, quote, "No decision has been made yet whether Congress will contest or attempt to overturn the district law that has been passed," end quote. In March, the district city council and the mayor signed a decrim law that makes possession of an ounce or less a mere $25 civil fine. Congress has the authority to overturn any law passed in Washington, D.C., but if they do not act within 60 legislative days, the law stands. Delegate Eleanor Holmes Norton, who represents D.C. in Congress, notes, quote, "Red and blue states alike have decriminalized marijuana from California to New York, from Mississippi to Nebraska. And yet the District of Columbia is the only jurisdiction that has gotten a full-fledged hearing on its local decriminalization law, end quote. Medical marijuana proponents in Oklahoma should begin collecting signatures for a ballot initiative in a couple of weeks, and a proposed legalization initiative may follow soon after. In addition to giving adults the right to cultivate 6 plants, possess an ounce outside the home, and share marijuana with other adults, the legalization proposal would also eliminate felony penalties for second convictions of any amount of marijuana. Not only would Oklahoma legalize marijuana stores and commercial production, it would become the first state to allow for the export of marijuana to other legal states. 82% of Oklahomans in a recent Sooner poll believe legalization should be left up to the states, 71% support medical marijuana, and 57% support decriminalization of an ounce. The poll did not ask about legalization. Both initiatives would need to collect over 155,000 valid signatures to be placed on the November ballot. Colorado recreational marijuana sales have increased for the third month in a row, according to the latest data from the State Department of Revenue. $14 million in recreational pot was sold in February, and that increased to $19 million in March as more pot shops opened for business and previous shortages in production are being filled. In the 3 months of Colorado's legal recreational marijuana industry, $7.2 million in tax money has been generated for the state, with another $5.3 million in tax revenue generated by the medical marijuana industry. Leafly, the smartphone app that's been dubbed the Yelp of cannabis, was named GeekWire.com's App of the Year at an annual awards ceremony in Seattle. Leafly has been downloaded over 1.4 million times and was chosen in a public vote for the GeekWire Awards that honor the top tech innovations in the Pacific Northwest. Leafly beat out such tech heavyweights as Microsoft in capturing the award. This has been your 420 Radio News for Friday, May 9th, 2014. I'm Russ Belville. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available at our website at 420radio.org. When we come back, we'll go behind the headlines and take a look at Boston cops who are suing over drug testing in the department, claiming it's racist and inaccurate. Who knew? You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you don't just want any attorney. You want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Lauren Vasquez knows the details of California marijuana law from both a personal and professional angle. Lauren Vasquez rose from the ranks of college normal activist to become one of the Bay Area's best marijuana lawyers. Visit her website, fireduplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your Fired Up Lawyer, or email firedublawyer@gmail.com. The number again is 855-MMJ-LAWS, 855-665-5297 for your Fired Up Lawyer, Lauren Vasquez. Lauren Vasquez is an activist attorney you can trust. Call today.
Mary, marijuana.
As marijuana goes mainstream, you need to be armed with the facts. Nobody can teach you better than Dr. Mitch Earlywine, PhD. You may know Dr. Mitch from his column in High Times magazine or his weekly appearance on The Russ Belville Show. Dr. Mitch is also the author of some of the best books on marijuana science, culture, history, and health, including Understanding Marijuana, Parents' Guide to Marijuana, Pot Politics, and more. Visit Amazon.com and search for Mitch Earlywine, that's E-A-R-L-E-Y-W-I-N-E, and order your books today. You can also contact Dr. Mitch by email at 420research@gmail.com. Weed Porn Daily with Oscar Diaz from Florida, replaying Mondays at 12 Pacific on 420radio.org.
Welcome back, everyone. Quarter after the hour, time for us to go behind the headlines. And in the Boston Herald, we learned today how Boston cops' lawsuit claims drug testing is racist and inaccurate. Really? 10 African-American Boston police officers who lost their jobs due to failed drug tests have won a major victory at a federal appeals court, reports the Boston Herald. The fired cops claim that a hair follicle test used to detect drug use unfairly singles out black people and leads to false positives. The appeals court judges agreed and sent the case back to the district court that had thrown it out. According to data from the police department, among both officers and cadets, there were 55 blacks and 30 whites who tested positive for cocaine from 1999 to 2006, for over 7 years. However, there were over 2.5 times more whites tested than blacks, about 4,000 blacks, about 10,000 whites. A statistical analysis showed these disproportionate rates of cocaine positive tests for black officers and cadets could not be mere chance, fulfilling an important legal test to determine if the testing violates the Civil Rights Act. Hair follicle testing has long been criticized as racially unfair due to the higher levels of melanin found in the hair of African and Mediterranean people. Melanin, the protein that gives us our skin and hair color, also happens to bind to cocaine and other drug metabolites at a higher rate. The unanimous 3-judge appeals panel agreed, noting that the federal government abandoned hair testing for federal employees over concerns of reliability. Now, 6 of the 10 officers have already been rehired and been given back pay when the Massachusetts Civil Service Commission threw out hair testing last year. But still, all 10 of the officers are continuing their lawsuit to get the other 4 police officers reinstated and to claim more restitution from the state for all 10 of them. They are joined by the Massachusetts Association of Minority Law Enforcement Officers, whose president, Larry Ellison, told the Boston Herald he, quote, doesn't want people accused of something that the science can't say, this is what they did, end quote. Oh, really, Larry? The science can't say this is what they did? You mean like when one of your canine officers alerts on a car that one of your cops claimed smells of weed, and then it turns out to have no weed inside? Or do you mean like a positive result for marijuana metabolites on a piss test that is then used to convict a sober person of impaired driving? Or are you only worried about the junk drug detection science when it indicts black police officers of having previously used cocaine? See, there's a certain irony to a minority police officers association complaining about the inherent civil rights violation of a hair follicle drug test rather than the inherent civil rights violation of drug testing in the first place. It's not that this type of drug testing is racist. It's that drug testing itself is wrong. So add to that irony that these cops who get their jobs back because of the racism of drug testing are going to go back on the streets enforcing drug laws that disproportionately target black people. And the irony that drug testing itself exists due to the drug war. Boy, you pile all that irony together, you've got your USDA recommended dose of irony for the month. Didn't somebody once reveal his dream that someday society would judge his children not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character? Well, judging people's fitness for employment by the content of their urine, saliva, and hair betrays the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It's nice that some Boston cops are beginning to understand the anger many of us, including me, have felt when fired from a job that we're well qualified for because of a drug test. And furthermore, when Larry Ellison goes on to talk about how, well, some people don't grow hair the same and they're not getting the hair from all the same locations and it opens up a lot of problems, yeah, you're preaching to the choir here, Larry Ellison. The whole reason I'm here doing this show for the past 5 years has to do with the fact that my information technology career was derailed by a hair follicle drug test. And since I don't have enough hair on the top of my head, they shaved the hair off my armpits and chest to determine whether or not I was qualified to do a job I'd already gotten stellar reviews for the past 2 years. So cry me a river, Boston cops, about drug testing being racist and unfair. Doesn't matter that it's racist, all drug testing is unfair. None of it tells you anything about the character of a person.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, The Russ Belville Show, Ganja John, and Cascadia Concentrates, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Adam's meticulous designs are individually crafted and screened in vibrant high-definition color. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org.
Support the Russ Belville Show. Text the word RUSS to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to the Russ Belville Show right from your smartphone. That's RUSS to 420-420.
In the afternoon, if I'm home, I smoke marijuana.
You're listening to Radical Russ. On the Russ Belville Show.
Oh, marijuana. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, I got my ganja.
NARMAL stands for Responsible Adult Cannabis Use. If cannabis use is causing problems in your life, consider taking a break or seeking medical assistance. Consider ceasing cannabis use if you have a family history of mental illness. Don't drive or operate heavy machinery while impaired by cannabis use. Cannabis use is not without risks, even though the risks may be far less than those posed by legal drugs. Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Rockin' Friday, featuring rock, metal, and the hard edge of alternative country. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tune.
All right, welcome back, everybody. It's 23 and a half after the hour, and here at Rolla J Studios, we are celebrating the first-round draft pick of the Green Bay Packers. Ha-ha! Clinton Dix for the Green Bay Packers. We are so happy to have on our team. Herb Thrasher's on the line with us. How you doing, Herb?
Oh, man, I'm doing great. And, yeah, how about that? I'm sure Alabama has given the state of Wisconsin all kinds of business.
Well, hell, today, between Eddie Lacy jerseys and now Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, come on now.
Well, don't forget, you know, it all started back with a quarterback named Bart Starr. And so Bama fans have always, you know, Bart Starr is a hero to Bama. And then with you know, him being a Packer, so Bama fans and Packer fans have always kind of had that little thing, and now it's even more. So congratulations to both of those guys and the Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, real excited. And to Johnny Manziel. You know, I don't know why everyone's hating these days, but I'm excited for him.
Yeah, you know, this is the kind of stuff we'll talk about on Herb Thrasher Flower Hour in Hour 2. We're putting our sports segment back on Herb Thrasher Show, so you can check that out 9 p.m. Every Friday. And speaking of Herb Thrasher, we're live tonight at 8 o'clock, and we've got a new replay schedule. You can catch last week's Herb Thrasher. We got a great interview with Jaron from Mach 22, and you can hear that earlier today at 5 a.m. and 8 a.m., but you'll hear it next at 5 p.m. And then at 8 p.m., we're back live, and you've got a great interview for us tonight.
Oh, man, I'm real excited. Heaviness coming from NOLA, the great city of New Orleans, and we have Mike Nine Williams from I Hate God. And these dudes are sludge masters, stoner rock, kind of becoming legends. And we'll have a brand new album coming out, releasing May 27th. And so we're going to talk to Mike about the new album releasing. They have a whole huge tour coming up. That starts on the 28th of May. So exciting times for the I Hate God camp and Housecore Records. And we're excited to talk with Mike Nine about all of that. And no telling where else we'll go with this, him being from the South. So
yeah.
Looking forward to good times and looking forward to hearing some of their sludgy new tunes tonight.
Yeah, check it out, 8 p.m. Pacific time, live tonight. And then we replay it tomorrow night, Saturday night, at the same time, 8 p.m. Pacific time. So if you miss it tonight, you can catch it tomorrow night. All right, let's get to Rockin' Friday. You know, we just did our Global Cannabis March last Saturday. Herb Thrasher was the MC, and a fine MC you were, sir. And you got to introduce us to a band out of Vancouver, Washington. Why don't you tell us about them?
Yeah, real excited. These guys have actually been around the community for a while because they've played Seattle Hemp Fest before, and they've played Hemp Stock before. Actually won the contest to be able to win that spot on the Hemp Stock a few years back. And just real true supporters of the scene, and they are from Vancouver, Washington. And I real enjoyed seeing their set. The video that we're going to see right here is So Slow. And this was actually the first full-length video that they shot for that Hemp Stock video contest. And they've got one full-length album out, and they just released another one, an EP called Sasquatch. And so look forward to them. They have a Reverb page, and they have a MySpace page. And they have kind of an Irie feeling, a little bit rock, a little bit reggae, a little bit alternative, being from Seattle, and just kind of mix it all together. I've been playing together since they were high school dudes, so they definitely have a little bit of chemistry going. Slightly Stupid comes to mind with their style. So you guys turn it up. Definitely support the Syndicate as they support the cannabis community. And they have a brand new album, Sasquatch. And this right here is So Slow from earlier on in the days. And I look forward to seeing you guys tonight on Herb Thrasher Flower Hour at 8 p.m. You guys have a safe weekend. And see you next week. Turn it up, folks.
Now watch 'em move in every direction.
Support the Russ Belville Show. Text the word RUSS to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to the Russ Belville Show right from your smartphone. That's RUSS to 420-420. You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
New Approach Oregon is a coalition of Oregon citizens who believe that treating marijuana use as a crime has failed, costing taxpayers millions in law enforcement resources. We believe it's time for a new approach on marijuana and that Oregonians deserve a chance to decide in the 2014 general election. Our approach will regulate, tax, and legalize marijuana for adults in Oregon. By implementing a strict system to regulate, tax, and legalize marijuana, we can move Oregon forward and create new revenue for critical services. Under our approach for 2014, 40% of funds would support K-12 education, 20% would support mental health and treatment services, and 15% would be dedicated to law enforcement. Public opinion, coupled with victories in Washington and Colorado, confirms marijuana legalization is inevitable. Visit our website at newapproachoregon.com or our page on Facebook at New Approach Oregon. Thank you. Electric Bob's Boogaloo, every Tuesday at 5 and 8 Pacific on 420radio.org. As marijuana legalization is sweeping the nation, filmmakers and entertainers are documenting the end of marijuana prohibition and celebrating the rise of cannabis culture. Join us now on the Russ Belville Show as we speak with another talented creator of cannabis cinema.
All right, welcome back, everybody. 34 after the hour, and we're joined on the telephone by Sean Patrick Crowell or Crowell. Can you give me a...
Crowell.
So Sean Patrick Crowell is joining us, and he's behind the film Grounded, which has won a few awards now at the various film festivals it's been shown at. Sean, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me on. It's a privilege.
Oh, it's great to have you here. And the movie is Grounded. You can find more out about it at, is it thegroundedmovie.com?
No, just groundedthemovie.com.
Oh, Grounded the Movie. I knew there was a the in there. Groundedthemovie.com. And you can find out more about this. And it's a fascinating tale. Could you give our listeners just basically the trailer description of the film?
Basically, this is the story of my two uncles who are marijuana smugglers in the 70s and 80s. And we were able to, that's been kind of like a family story for, you know, basically my whole life. I'd heard little bits about what had gone on with their antics. And then I was able to track down some of the police officers, the undercover narcotics agents and DEA agents that were involved in tracking down smugglers. And I was like, this sounds like a great documentary. And I just kind of went with it. And I was able to get all those guys to trust me. And we moved forward. And, you know, I think we made a great little film.
I completely agree. And one of the things that I really liked about how you framed this documentary is as two teams, almost two families, two sets of brothers, whether they be brothers in arms, law enforcement, or actual, you know, genetic brothers. Can you give our audience a feeling for how that informed your filming of the documentary and telling of the story?
Well, I mean, clearly my uncles are both brothers. So, and they were, they had a code that they went by, and they were strictly like no violence, no guns, no cocaine or anything like that. And one of my uncles at one time, he said, you know, nobody at that time in the 70s, he said, nobody's going to kill you over a plain load of pot. He said, they kill you over a really small amount of cocaine. And they just didn't want to bear the burden of the karma of that. And when I was speaking with the DEA agents and the Alabama Department of Public Safety agents about it, they kind of looked at it like, you know, almost like a cat and mouse, you know, almost like a moonshiner type of thing, because there are very rarely any weapons involved in that. And it was more of like an outsmarting skill. And even they said that when they apprehended pilots, anytime they apprehended pilots, they always kind of pulled them away from the rest of the group and were just kind of like, tell us some stories. And it was kind of endearing, you know, and it was cool that they didn't really, I mean, I think those guys, because there was a low threat to their life and it was more of a cat and mouse thing, I think they, those law enforcement guys really liked the challenge of it. You know, like, let's see if we can overcome, you know, these things and catch these guys.
So it sounds like
on the other side, we're trying to avoid detection. So it was kind of a cool story in that aspect.
Yeah, it sounds as if, you know, the law enforcers could easily tell the difference between the dangerous and criminal enterprise of cocaine dealing, for example,
sure,
versus a more mom and pop, you know, your neighbors kind of aspect to the marijuana side.
Exactly. And in a lot of cases, I mean, these guys aren't career smugglers. I mean, they had jobs. They were teachers, pilots, musicians, you know, the whole run of the gamut. You know, it was an opportunity. You know, in the 70s when they were doing this, the economy was in the tank. Now, certainly for my hometown of Pittsburgh, where my uncles are from, I mean, you couldn't get a job in that town. So, I mean, that was a legitimate avenue for a job, you know, to get some money to feed your family. And they went after it wholeheartedly. So
This must have been
kind of incredible.
This must have been something for you to have to put together in film, having your personal background growing up and knowing these two men as your uncles. As you got into the story and even heard it told from the law enforcement side, what did you find? Did you find anything new out about your uncles you hadn't known before, or something that surprised or impressed you?
Probably more story-wise for me, like, now I'm the expert, you know, because I was really the only person that really pushed them and asked them questions about it. And then when I spoke to them about, hey, let's make this movie, and I was able to gain their trust. And we sat down for hours, you know, we sat down for hours with all of the guys for months on end just to get real clarity of what happened. And, you know, we interviewed them for about 4 hours, and, you know, it was like, wow, you know, I know everything now. And then when I went and talked to the guys in the law enforcement, I mean, one of the cool things about it is all those guys are there. And spoiler alert was that there is a bust at the end of the film, and you get the perspective of that bust as told by the law enforcement perspective and the smugglers perspective. And they're all four of those guys are in different places as the bus goes down, and they have a really neat perspective. So you continue, you go from the cockpit of the plane to the undercover narcotics agent on the ground to the arresting officers who are hiding on the sides of the runway to my other uncle was a lookout. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you hear all their perspectives of it, and it all just kind of comes at you all at once. So it was really, to answer your question, it was really cool to get that kind of insight into a great, you know, a family story now that was kind of a legendary family story.
Yeah, having recently been arrested in Utah, I saw that part and it just made my hair stand up, but I totally understand. We're speaking with Sean Patrick Kroll. He's the director and filmmaker behind Grounded, which is a documentary on his uncle's marijuana smugglers, and you can find out more about it at groundedthemovie.com. And, you know, with our background here on the show, one of the good friends of our show, who's inviting me out next week, as a matter of fact, to present at the Florida Marijuana Conference, is Robert Platschorn, who served 29 years in prison for the same exact thing, the marijuana smuggling, flying it in. That, you know, kind of informs me when I'm watching these films and I think of the risks that were taken there. Did your uncles ever, you know, dread that moment that they would be doing major federal time?
You know, I think at the time, in the late 70s, before the real RICO stuff started happening, and it was before the Reagans' war on drugs, you know. So they basically, Uncle Terry, I think, served 6 years, and Uncle Junior served 4, my Uncle Terry being the pilot and my Uncle Junior being on the ground. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, obviously the threat of jail time, nobody wants to go to jail. I mean, it's, you know, but one of the comments that they made was like, you know, by the time they got out and the war on drugs was, you know, really ramping up, there were guys going to jail for, you know, a pound of pot that were doing way more time than those guys did, you know, for bringing in 25,000 pounds of pot.
So at the time they're involved in this, it's not as high on everyone's radar, so to speak.
Exactly. And then I think, you know, you had a real paradigm shift as far as the war on drugs and the criminalization aspects of marijuana. And my one uncle spoke about it in the film. When his girlfriend's mom found out that he was a smuggler, she was like, "Oh, it's just marijuana." The dread of somebody bringing cocaine and that kind of stuff was kind of fluffed off. And even my own grandfather, who was a willing participant in helping these guys, was like, "Ah, it's just pot." And that's a guy that's a World War II generation guy.
Wow.
So but what happened in the country is I'm sure like this whole machine started up in the early '80s.
Yeah.
And really, the demonization and all that kind of stuff just kept pushing. And I think we're in the pullback mode right now. I think the pendulum's swinging back the other way, clearly. Even when I started this film, confidants of mine were like, "I don't know if you want to do a marijuana film." And that's 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm like, I'm so glad I told this story, because there's a historical aspect that people aren't, focusing on.
Right.
And it's these guys in the 70s and early 80s that were peaceful and bringing in pot, and the police that it was a cat and mouse game for them, and a lot of excitement and a lot of adventure. And I think at the end of the day, those guys didn't want to go to jail, but at the same token, it wasn't they weren't going to jail guilty, meaning like they didn't have like a big karma cross to bear, as far as like cocaine is a different animal. And those kind of drugs are a different animal, destroying lives and stuff like that. And, one of my uncles, Terry, made a comment to me one day. It was like, you're walking around in prison and some of the harder people are like, you guys are always happy. And, my uncle said that, like, that really struck him. And he goes, he was trying to think about that. And he's like, "Yeah, I'm just here doing time." He goes, I don't have the guilt of destroying lives or killing somebody or doing some of those horrible things that are usually connected with drug smuggling, certainly with cocaine. And he says, I slept a little better at night, and I really believe him, that they didn't go in, thinking that this was, a violent thing. And, it's too many times in film, a lot of people have attached entertainment value to violence. I mean, you see it in, no doubt there's some entertainment value in it, but, in documentaries, it's like so much better. I think the adventure is a little bit more entertaining than the violence.
Mm-hmm.
And with these guys, it's a real adventure.
Hmm. Yeah. Now that marijuana is becoming legalized, I mean, just going like crazy in Colorado, going to start up here in Washington, more states to come. Does anybody get the itch to go back and do this as a legit business? Are they interested in that in any way?
I've heard them talk about it, I think it's, they're kind of established now in their careers as a musician and a salesman and stuff like that. But, at some family gatherings, they're like, "Oh, man, we should look into a medical marijuana facility sometime," and it's kind of like a little tongue in cheek. I mean, because obviously there's some commitments, involved business-wise and stuff like that. I think for Michael Perry, who was the pilot, in addition to, he really loved that kind of aviation. It was really, fly by the seat of your pants, exciting stuff. And I think he was drawn into that, that adventure, so not a lot of adventure, political adventure with, medical marijuana shot for sure.
How about the law enforcement people you talk to as you're filming the movie? I mean, you said it was 5 years in the making that this is as legalization is happening and unfolding. Did they have any reactions to that?
I think, first and foremost, as a filmmaker, I was honest from the first day, that I was able to get in contact with these guys. I had help getting in contact with the undercover narcotics agents. And I was just honest with them. I was like, "Hey, these are my uncles. I'm telling their story. I know you're there. I'm not out to lampoon you guys. I'm out to just kind of explain what happened." And it took for a DE agent to step out and go, "Yeah, let's do it." And for an undercover narcotics agent, for sure. I mean, I think that they were happy to participate in the fact, that it wasn't a violent thing. And as we went through the interview process, I could tell that they really, in my opinion, their views on marijuana were very similar to moonshine. They looked at it like, it's our job. We got to go bust these guys. It wasn't like, marijuana was destroying the streets of America, like cocaine and heroin and all that other stuff. I mean, they were looking at it more like, it's a moonshine hunters. People like to get high, whatever, and it's not killing anybody, And I think that they had, they were very serious about their job, but as they looked at it, I think they, equated it to what prohibition was in the 30s.
Hmm.
So, and that was kind of, I knew that, you know, has, I knew that they were sympathetic towards my uncles, and I was very careful not, I didn't want to make, you know, I was very respectful that they trusted me with their story, you know, my uncles with the smuggling and the law enforcement agents, and I didn't want to slant things, mm-hmm. you know, I didn't, you know, I could have very easily made, you know, a pro-law enforcement film or a real pro-marijuana film, but what I really wanted to do was respect the audience and let them see, you know, how this all thing plays out, and like, man, this is only, you know, this isn't that long ago, and how our attitudes have changed, you know, mm-hmm. with marijuana for sure. So, and I think, you know, most documentary film audiences are pretty intelligent, and they want to be entertained, and they want to make their own opinions about films and topics.
Yeah, I think you did that. I think you did a very even-handed look at the topic, and the stories are great. It's great filmmaking. Sean Patrick Kroll is the filmmaker behind this movie. It's called Grounded. You can check it out online at groundedthemovie.com. And Sean, before I let you go, do you have a Facebook or Twitter and any of those things you need to promote?
You can check us out on Facebook. We've been running some contests at Grounded the Movie on Facebook. Silicon Valley, the new HBO show, is dealing with some guys in Silicon Valley in the tech industry, and they're all kind of potheads, and I was able to get one of our posters placed on the show.
Oh.
And if you do a screen grab of that poster, it's almost in every episode, and tag Grounded the Movie on Facebook, I'll send you a free download.
Oh, that's excellent. Well,
it's been a lot of fun. I actually had a judge win it last week.
That's great news, man. Well, good luck to you on the documentary. I love the film and encourage everyone to check it out. Sean, thanks for being here on the show with us.
Thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
All right, you too.
Bye.
Really do like these films that are coming out, these even-handed and intelligent looks at the people involved in this war on drugs. And sometimes getting away from the right or wrong of it and just looking at the personal stories is a good thing. So check it out, groundedthemovie.com. When we come back, we'll have time for a radical rant. Minnesota, not the medical marijuana thing, they got rid of civil asset forfeiture. I get to rant about something good. Stay tuned.
The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today. 420 Radio, the home of marijuana experts.
My name's Davey, and I want to tell you about my friend, Glitch. He's done some pretty dopey things, like rollerblading down a roller coaster. He even thought he could be a pro wrestler. Then he thought he could fly. And once, some kids tried to get him to do drugs.
Beat it! I've done some dopey things, but I'll never do dope.
Drug free's the way to...
Down the computer.
Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Minnesota now requires a criminal conviction before people can lose their property to forfeiture. We've talked about this issue before on the show a few times, civil asset forfeiture, and just yesterday, Minnesota Governor Mark Dayton signed a bill to curb civil forfeiture. The newly signed legislation is Senate File 874, and now it means that the government, the state, can only take property if it obtains a criminal conviction or its equivalent, like if a property owner pleads guilty to a crime or becomes an informant. The bill also shifts the burden of proof onto the government where it rightly belongs. This is reported in Forbes.com, and the people behind it are the Institute for Justice, contributing to this, that worked hard on getting this passed. And for people that don't know, let me give you just a thumbnail sketch of what's going on here. In almost every state in America and at the federal level, there's this piece of law called civil asset forfeiture. Now, there's criminal asset forfeiture. Now, that's where you're convicted of a crime and then you lose your criminal gotten proceeds from that crime, right? Like you rob a bank, well, you're going to forfeit the money that you robbed in the bank. And if you had a continuing drug crime going on, smuggling or dealing or whatever, and from the proceeds of the money that you made from that, you bought yourself, you know, a Shark Tank and, you know, a Ferrari, well, you're going to lose that, right? But civil asset forfeiture is a different thing entirely. Under civil asset forfeiture, it's not the person being charged with the crime. It's the property being charged of being in violation of being legitimate property because it was gotten through ill-gotten means. It was drug proceeds or whatever. And in this civil asset forfeiture kangaroo court, the way that it works is that your property would be guilty until proven innocent. Once there was a civil asset forfeiture proceeding against your property, you had the burden of proof to go and prove that it wasn't. That is, you had to go prove a negative. You had to go prove that your cash, your property, your real estate, whatever it is they seized, isn't from drug proceeds. And let's say that that came about when you were charged for some drug crime and then you were found not guilty of that drug crime, that didn't matter. Your property was still guilty. You couldn't go into the civil court and say, hey, look, see, I was found not guilty of being a drug criminal. That didn't matter. The civil asset forfeiture, they could still keep your stuff. So who was opposed to this? Who do you think? Law enforcement. Law enforcement was vociferously opposed to this Senate file 874. But once it got to the floor of the Senate and the House there in Minnesota, it found wide bipartisan support. It passed the Minnesota Senate 55-5. And it passed the Minnesota State House unanimously. Republicans, Democrat farm laborers, everybody, with the exception of five people, thought it was a good idea that maybe you ought to be convicted of a crime before cops can take your stuff. Now, here's some statistics behind this. And this is, you know, Institute of Justice put together a report that was called A Stacked Deck: How Minnesota's Civil Forfeiture Laws Put Citizens' Property at Risk. And they found some interesting stats. So I told you, your civil asset forfeiture, your property is charged with a crime, right? The way this would work is oftentimes, you know, if they found you and you pulled you over the side of the road and you had, you know, a pound of weed in your car, they seize your car and they seize the weed and they seize your money, your cash, like if you had cash on you, right? So you have to go to court to prove that your car and your cash didn't come from dealing weed. Well, that requires an attorney. And civil asset forfeiture attorneys are not cheap, because it is a kangaroo court. You have to find a guy who's really, shall we say, flexible, limber in the law to be able to defend you on these sort of things. So what happens here, they found that the average value of a civil asset forfeiture was $1,250. Right? Maybe cash, they're seizing, you know, a used car, maybe they're seizing some cash that you had on you. But if it's only $1,250, you're going to blow through that in lawyer hours well before you even get to court. So it doesn't make any sense for you, financially speaking, to go try to fight for your money or property if it costs you more for the lawyer than the property itself is worth. They also found that barely 4% of forfeitures between 2003 and 2010 were more than $5,000. See, the cops aren't dumb here. They know if they seize the big, big, big fish, then someone will hire a lawyer and try to get it back. But if they seize a whole bunch of little fish, nobody's going to fight for that. And that's free money. In fact, they found police even forfeited a nylon bag worth a mere 22 cents. It's not too surprising, then, that more than 95% of those charged with a drug crime in Minnesota do not file a civil forfeiture case. 95%. Now, what has happened here because of civil asset forfeiture all across the country in most states, in the case of Minnesota, they could keep up to 90% of the proceeds from their seizures, right? Up to 90% of what they forfeited, what they stole from people, they could keep. Here's what that reaped for them. Forfeiture revenue grew by 75% from 2003 to 2010 in the state of Minnesota, earning police almost $30 million in 7 years. $30 million. In 2012 alone, there were 6,851 property seizures worth a collective $6.7 million, even though the crime rate has been dropping in Minnesota. There was a settlement that happened in court just recently. Officers for the Minnesota Metro Gang Strike Force seized cars, cash, a flat-screen TV, and jewelry from people never even charged with a crime. Never charged with a crime. And that task force was dissolved in 2009, and in the settlement, 96 victims were awarded $840,000, and some of their property was returned. Drug-related forfeitures in Minnesota made up almost half of the forfeiture cases in Minnesota. Now, because of this new law signed by Governor Dayton, there has to be a criminal conviction before anyone can lose their property in Minnesota. But we got to change this all across the country. In Massachusetts, a man named Russ Caswell almost lost his family hotel, his motel, family motel, when the government charged it was facilitating drug crimes, because the evidence here, over 14 years, renting rooms to 200,000 guests, there were 15 drug arrests. 15! Over 14 years, over 200,000 guests, and they were going to seize his whole hotel for that. Tony Jalali in California lost his property for renting space to a medical marijuana dispensary. Lost it over $37 worth of marijuana. Check this out at Forbes.com. Minnesota now requires a criminal conviction before people can lose their property to forfeiture.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
That's all the time we got for Hour 1. Thanks for joining us, but the show continues into Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio, where you're the voice of the Marijuana Nation. Call us at 971-533-7111. For all the VIPs supporting 420radio.org, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.